to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with David Cochrane. David is the author of historical novel A Storm Hits Valparaiso, as well as several short story collections. He has also published Let's Get Digital, How to Self-Publish and Why You Should. So welcome, David.
Hi, Joanna.
As I was saying before, it's lovely to meet you in person after, you know, being on the Twitter and blogs for so long.
Yeah, it's good to meet you at last.
Okay, so first of all, why don't you tell us a bit about you and your writing background?
Okay, well, I've been scribbling something for as long as I can remember. I think I actually had a short story published when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old in some library circular. I think I won some competition or came second or something. And I think I actually self-published something around the same age. It was a comic book, and I sold the grand total of one copy before realizing I didn't have to redraw the whole thing, and I could just photocopy it and sell more than one copy. So I had to buy it back. And then I moved into sweets because I was making more money off that, and then the school shut us down. So that was the end of my publishing career for 25 years or so. But I started writing seriously with the aim of publication in 2005, 2006. And I started some terrible novel about, I think it was about a failed hand model. And I thought it was a great idea at the time. Of course, I thought everything I was writing was amazing. And then I realized after a while that it was all terrible and I should really start something else. And I came across the idea for this historical novel. And I think it took about 3 years for me to write it because I was traveling around the world at the time and I was really just snatching time in cafes and bars and restaurants in between jobs. But I eventually got it done 3 years later and I let it sit for a month and then went over it again. And then I thought it was pretty much perfect. And I sent it out to a bunch of publishers and agents and got pretty much no response. And then I started taking another look at it and joining writing forums and writing communities and getting people to pay to read it and all that. Started knocking into shape, and then I would go through another round of sending it out to more agents and more publishers, getting slightly better rejections. And that went on for about 18 months. And I was kind of thinking maybe I should trunk this one because it was a pretty ambitious novel for a first attempt. It was like 7 main characters and this war going on for 12 years. All the storylines are interweaving. And I thought maybe I'd bitten off more than I could chew. So I was just about to rip it up and start something simpler. And I got an email from a New York agent. It was around Christmas 2010, so just over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And this was an up-and-coming New York agent who just left a big agency to sit up on his own. And I won't say who it is, but he emailed me and he was saying he hoped I hadn't got an agent yet because it was about 3 or 4 months since I'd sent him the full that he requested. And I was over the moon, you know. He told me to call him and he wanted to discuss it more, and I thought, great. And so I called him and we spoke for a good while, and he told me all sorts of nice things about the novel. He said it was big and sweeping and really great and all this. And we said we'd talk again in a week or something. And that was the last time I spoke to him or heard from him at all. He didn't respond to a message I left him. He didn't respond to an email. So I figured he'd just either changed his mind or maybe he got another novel that was along the same lines that had more commercial potential or whatever, you know. This is not an unusual story, unfortunately. No. But I was in a deep funk now at this point, you know. I felt like I'd let it slip through my fingers and I couldn't really summon up the energy to start querying again. And I got into kind of a negative place, and then I just thought, look, I want to be a writer and one book is only going to be so important in my career. And so maybe I should just trump this one and start something else. So I went back to that simpler idea, which is one main character and in a more kind of familiar setting and locale for commercial purposes. And I started writing that, and I got a couple of chapters in and I just hit a wall. I think I'd lost all confidence in myself and my writing, and I was doubting every sentence I was putting down. And you can't write when you're in that frame of mind at all. And I really considered just walking away from writing altogether. And self-publishing had always been on my radar, and I think it was around that time that Barry Eisler walked away from $500,000, and, you know, that really got my attention. And then I think, was it a week or two later, Amanda Hawkins signed with St. Martin's Press for $2 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd been aware of self-publishing for quite a while. I'd been reading Joe Conrad's blog and Dean Wesley Smith for at least a couple of years. But I always thought that self-publishing was really for people who, you know, had a reverted backlist or who were coming off a pretty solid career in trade publishing, and that someone who was unknown and unpublished like me didn't really have a chance. But then I started, I think I joined up with Kindle Boards around that time, and I started seeing all these writers who, they weren't selling like the same numbers as Conrad or Locke or Hawking, but they were making a living out of it. They were quitting their day jobs or they're on the way to doing so. And these guys weren't troubling the top 100, you know. They just had a good few books out and they were doing pretty well, and they were selling enough of them a day and selling at a price where they were making a living out of it or approaching that. And that really made me sit up and take notice, because most of these guys didn't come from trade publishing. They started out just like me, unpublished and unknown.
Hmm.
But there was still something in my head that it just had been beaten into me that self-publishing was the last resort, you know, and that readers would look askance at the books and it could permanently damage any hopes you had of a publishing deal and all this kind of thing. You know, there was a lot of that stuff being talked about at the time, not so much now.
Yeah.
But I was really unsure what to do. And I remember I had a nasty flu for about a week and I was in bed and I read everything I could on self-publishing and all these writers, how they got to where they were. And I still couldn't decide, because the novel was still with three pretty big agents that were still considering it. And I thought it might damage any prospect I had of getting a deal if I self-published. And I finally broke the impasse by realizing I could self-publish a couple of short stories just as an experiment. I could see, you know, if I could do it, if I could sell anything, and if I enjoyed it. So I did that. And I think in my first month, I published two short stories, and I think I sold around 150 copies. And I knew straight away I was having so much fun, and all the joy had returned to my writing. I think I wrote another short story in 3 days, which I ended up publishing that month. And, like, the buzz was back, you know? It was fun again. And I knew that I was going to publish everything this way.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's awesome. And I guess what's interesting is you've sort of come out of nowhere. You have started your blog kind of at the same time. Would that be right? Because your blog is sort of news and your take on indie, but it's, you know, you're pretty regular and pretty vocal now. Was that a strategy?
There was zero strategy involved. I decided to self-publish a short story on the 3rd of April, and I think I wrote my first blog post on the 4th of April. And I just said, I'm going to document the process of a complete unknown trying to crack into self-publishing. Because I was on one writing forum, which was kind of tilted towards trade publishing, and a lot of people who were defending that path and you know, kind of warning people against self-publishing. So I thought it would be kind of a controlled experiment, you know. I'm just going to document how an unknown gets on. I didn't know if I was going to sell 10 copies or whatever, you know. Mm. So I thought it might be interesting. And, like, I was scrabbling around for the same information that every self-publisher does at the start, how to find an editor, how to get a cover designer, formatting, ISBNs, copyright, all that stuff. And while there was a lot of great information out there, I felt it was kind of scattered across 100 different blogs or across 3 different books. So I thought I would just gather it together as I was doing it. And just post the steps up as I did them. So as I found my editor and sent off my first manuscript, I wrote a blog post about that and did the same with my cover and with formatting and with everything else the whole way along. And the blog readership just exploded. It was really, really surprising. I think because I was telling people where I screwed up, as well as, you know, things that worked for me. And I was just honest about everything. And it really took off. And I think it was a lot of luck and timing as well, because around the time the blog started growing, we had, like, John Locke hitting a million Kindle books and J.K. Rowling self-publishing. And it was like huge news story all summer, week after week, which is traditionally the dead time in publishing in the year. But for self-publishing, it was just like a headline every other day. And I had a lot of time on my hands, so I was blogging about everything as I saw it. And the readership just went from strength to strength. It was great.
Mm. And so the novel is now self-published, is that right?
Yes. I released it a few days before Christmas, so it only took me 5.5 years.
Well done.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
It was cool because I was coming home for Christmas, and, you know, for the last few years, I'd come home on Christmas and my friends and family would ask, like, oh, how's the book getting on? And, like, oh, I'm getting slightly better rejections now. I you know, I got a personal rejection last week, and, you know, now I have something real to say. You can buy it. It's on Amazon, you know, and that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Okay, so you know, you just said there about some of the big headlines, and they keep on coming. Now, before Christmas, I think you came out against KDP Select. I wondered, but you also had some blog posts from people who are doing quite well. What do you think of KDP Select now?
Well, I'd like to kind of split out how I feel about it personally, for me as a writer, and how I feel about it in general.
Mm-hmm.
For me as a writer, where I am and what I'm trying to do, KDP Select, I don't think is a good idea. I'm in the middle of trying to expand my distribution as much as possible. I'm trying to get into places like Waterstones and Tesco's and a new ebook store in Ireland and another one in the Czech Republic and one in Australia. I'm trying to expand my distribution as much as possible. So the exclusivity thing for me, for existing titles, certainly counts it out. But talking about it in general, I think it, you know, we've clearly seen that there's some writers who have gotten great results out of it. And it's not just the guys that were already at the top. There's new writers now hitting numbers that they never hit before. So for some writers, it is proven to be a good thing. Now, the reason why I came out against it in general is because I think we're going to head towards a lot of subscription-based reading this year. And by that, I mean, similar to what you have in the UK, Love Film, or what you have in the US, Netflix, readers are going to be offered, either by Amazon or another company, a system where they pay a monthly fee and they get to read unlimited amounts, or certainly a lot more than the one borrow a month that the lending library currently offers. Now, at the moment, those borrows aren't cannibalizing sales because readers can only borrow one for one. But when we move to a model, which we will, where a significant percentage of readers are reading through a subscription model, they will start to cannibalize sales. So I thought it was important to set a precedent at the start where we set a minimum rental, or we have some control over the price. I think it's a dangerous precedent where we're all fighting for a fixed pot. You know, it introduces this kind of level of competition between writers, but more importantly, we lose control of pricing. And for self-publishers, one of the key competitive advantages we have over larger publishers is control of pricing. We can price because we have so little overhead. This is my office, you know, I'm talking to you from here. It's my kitchen.
It's mine.
Yeah. So I have so little overhead that I can price a book at 99 cents, or I can give it away for free for a few days, or I can have a 2-day sale for a very low price. I can control my pricing, and pricing is such an important tool that if we lose control of that, we lose one of our biggest advantages.
But saying that, you know, and I mean, I'm still undecided. I've put one book in and I have yet to really push it. But do you think that anyone's going to challenge Amazon now? We have Nook, you know, potentially being sold off. We have Apple maybe doing something. Who knows? Google seem to be quite quiet. Who's challenging Amazon, and what do you think is going to change in the face of self-publishing distributors, I guess?
I see quite a few challengers for Amazon. You know, Nook is being sold, I think, precisely because Barnes & Noble don't have the deep pockets necessary to invest in things like an aggressive international rollout, which Amazon are doing right now. And Kobo were the same. So they sold to that Japanese company. I don't want to say their name because I typed it wrong on my blog and I believe that's a rude word in Japanese. So we'll just call it that Japanese company for now. So Kobo now are being backed by someone with very deep pockets and a company who are strong in places where Amazon are weak, like Japan. And so I see Kobo definitely posing an international challenge to Amazon. In the US, it's a little trickier. Amazon are pretty entrenched. Apple, I don't know what their approach to books is. The iBook store is horrible to use. Buying books through iTunes is a terrible experience. The search doesn't work. The way they classify books is terrible. It's impossible to find anything except for the ones that are in the top 100. And even if you directly search for my name, I don't think all my books come up. It really needs a lot of work. I think a lot of that is down to Steve Jobs didn't really have a belief that adults read a lot, and he thought that was just going to get worse and worse. And I think he got that one wrong. I think with e-reading, we're seeing a renaissance in reading. I think people that switch to digital, they read more, they spend more on books, and it's actually bringing readers back into the fold, that lapsed readers, if you like, who maybe when they got a promotion in work or when they got married or when they had kids, they started reading less and less. But now it's bringing those people back in because reading has become so much more convenient and cheaper.
I mean, I see that myself. I had almost stopped reading fiction because it was too expensive, certainly in Australia. And now with the Kindle, I'm just, you know, eating it up.
Yeah. But that one click button is very, very
tempting. Oh, it's a killer, isn't it? It really is. But I wanted to also ask you, because you're in Stockholm, I'm in London, a lot of my listeners are Americans. Can you comment on what's happening, you know, in Europe with ebooks versus America?
Well, it's quite a complex picture, to be honest. You have a big difference between the countries where the Kindle store has launched and where it hasn't. But there's a number of things which are holding back the growth of ebooks in Europe. One of the biggest ones is VAT. It's sales tax, essentially, but it's levied at between 18 and 25%, depending on which country you're in. Now, Amazon, up until January 1st, they used to sell all books through their Luxembourg subsidiary. So anyone that bought a book in the EU only had to pay the Luxembourg rate of 15%. But they changed that policy since the 1st of January. And now if you're in Ireland, you have to pay the Irish rate of VAT, which is 23%. If you're in Sweden, it's 25%. Mm-hmm. And I believe in Hungary, it's 27%. There's a few other countries which are even higher. So, you know, that makes a big difference, especially when you're talking about books at $2.99 or $4.99. And on top of that, Amazon levy a surcharge of $2 on every book purchased in most international countries. So any country not served by one of the Kindle stores, plus Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand, I believe, and Canada. Outside of that, every other country has to pay a $2 surcharge on top. So while this might slow the sales of the $14.99 bestsellers from the big publishers, it really kills the sales of cheaper books, because your 99-cent book all of a sudden becomes about $3.50 once you add on the surcharge and then VAT. So they don't have the same access to cheap books that people in the US do or people in the UK do. So that really dampens the market. Then on top of that, Amazon are struggling to make the same kind of deals with publishers. The publishers see what's happened in America and they're scared. And they don't want to hand over control of pricing to Amazon. You know, some of this is for good reason, but some of this is purely because they want to shore up print sales. And print books are a lot more expensive in Europe than they are in America. So they have a lot more to protect, you know. So all of that together is slowing down the market. But it's still growing. And even in places like Sweden, where there's no Kindle store and where Amazon levies the surcharge and where there's very high VAT, ebooks are growing at a phenomenal rate. Like, this revolution, like, won't be held back by anything. It might be slowed in places because of various laws or because Amazon hasn't moved in yet, but it's coming. It's coming everywhere. I have no doubt.
Absolutely. And I'm personally very excited about India, which is kind of rumoured. You know, I don't know if you've heard any more about that, but that's where I'm kind of excited in terms of an English reading audience.
Yeah. The last I heard, I think, is what everybody heard, which is that Amazon were opening a physical, I think it was a warehouse or a distribution center or something like that, which is usually the first step. They go in with a physical store and then they open the Kindle store. Well, lately they've opened the Kindle store quite quickly after that. And I believe they're hiring. But as to when exactly they'll open, it's hard to know. I don't think it's the next Kindle store they'll open. I think that'll be Brazil. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But after that, it could be anywhere, really. There's been rumors about Japan. There's been rumors about India. There's been rumors about other countries in South America, which would make sense because Spanish language rights tend to be bundled in all of Latin America together with Spain, and they've already got Spain up and running, so it shouldn't take too much extra to get that done. But it's coming everywhere. There was a Nook deal with the New York Times recently where if you subscribe to the digital edition of the New York Times, you've got a free Nook. And I think this is where... this is where things are going. They're going to be e-readers are going to be marketed like mobile phones, where if you sign up for a subscription, you get a free e-reader. I think that's going to happen maybe even this year, you know.
Yeah, well, didn't Amazon even say that they're underpricing the Kindle Fire in order to, you know, sell more stuff, basically?
Yeah, well, there's various estimates around, but they're either losing a little bit or they're only making a tiny bit on each one. And when you probably factor in things like shipping and marketing and distribution, they're probably losing on each one. But the idea is to chain people to the store. You know, it's a device solely built to sell products. It's not like the iPad where you can, you know, shoot your own movies or make your own software programs. It's purely designed for consumption. And it's a clever move, and it kills the competition. You know, there's very few that can match Amazon on scale. So Amazon will be able to ship millions and millions of these and price them at a level that will put anyone else out of business, bar maybe Apple and the other heavyweights.
Yeah.
It's smart.
Okay, so we've kind of, you know, as we've said, we've seen this almost a gold rush, almost, I think, a feeling of excitement and just plunging into indie. What are people still doing wrong, do you see, in this market?
How much time do we have?
Give me three things.
I'll just say one thing. The basics. I think people are getting better, you know, but I think there's still a lot of work to do on the basics. I don't think a lot of people are spending enough on editing or on cover design. I think people can work harder on making their blurbs more enticing and understanding that the sample has to really, really grab people right from the start. And just simple things like moving all that front matter that's traditionally in a print book, like the dedication, the contents, all that to the back. You want the reader diving into the story straight away. You want the reader to be grabbed straight away. And that doesn't mean you have to have an explosion. It just means you have to have a sentence which is arresting. You know, in your first couple of lines, have a sentence which is arresting, you know, which is really going to tell them what the style of the book is about. And but yeah, it's all the basics. And the problem is, like, people say that I can't afford $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever for an editor. I can't afford $500 for a cover designer. So I'm just going to put it out now, see what sales I get, and then maybe I'll be able to afford it. And it doesn't work like that. You know, you got to treat this like a business. You got to put out the most professional product you possibly can. And if you can't afford an editor now, then wait, or barter, or do some crowdfunding. You know, come up with a creative way of getting the money. Like my sister does my covers, which is great because she's a professional. And you know, you've got to, when you're starting a business, you've got to beg, borrow, and steal, pull in every favor you can, get the money somehow. I'm not saying go into debt. That's a pretty stupid idea. But you've got to somehow make sacrifices. Whatever you have to do, you know, but get a professional editor, get a professional cover designer, and work on that blurb until it really, really pulls people in. Because, you know, that blurb is going to sell your book. Like, all these things are going to sell your book, but they all have to be perfect, or else the reader will just click on to something else. So it's really the basics. And the problem is that people skimp on editors and cover designers and everything like that, or formatters. And then they put out a product, they put out the book. I don't like calling books products. I slip into it every now and then. But they put out their book and it doesn't sell too well. So then they, you know, they get a few hundred dollars and they buy in one ad and it doesn't really work out. So then they buy two more ads and they've already spent more than a professional editor would have cost. And they would have been much better off spending that money on an editor in the first place. So I really think people should, you know, publish when they're ready, of course. Make sure it's their best possible work because your name is your brand. And if the first time a reader comes across one of your stories and they read it and they think it's terrible or it's undercooked or the formatting is awful or there's typos, they'll never read something by you again, even if they see a string of 5-star reviews after you. But if you produce a professional product and if the reader enjoys your story, they'll buy everything you publish as long as you keep up that standard. And so you've got to remember that. Your name is your brand. Publish the most professional product you can and make sure all the little pieces are as good as you can make them. And I think a lot of self-publishers look at other self-published work and they think that's their only competition. It's not. It's the biggest books from the biggest writers, from the biggest publishers. That's what the reader has to choose between. And it's not always about price. It's about reading time. You know, should they read the latest Stephen King or should they read your book? You've got to make them comfortable that your book is going to be good. And all these things, like a cover, a blurb, the formatting, the sample, all of these things are subtle cues that you've taken enough care of the inside of the book, the story, which is the most important part.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think editing is critical, cover design is critical. And, you know, you mentioned words there like brand and product, I know you didn't want to, but, you know, and those things that you've mentioned are pretty much your Amazon sales page marketing, you know, your blurb and your reviews. What do you find most effective for marketing your book? Books?
Well, products. Well, this is a tricky one because, well, like, there's an old adage which is quite famous, which is 50% of the money you spend on advertising is a waste, but you never know which 50%. And I think, you know, I think that was coined back in the 60s, and I think that effective percentage has probably dropped nowadays because ads are quite literally everywhere and we're quite good at chewing them out. And when you talk about things like marketing through social media, that effective percentage really plummets. So you never really know what is effective, and especially because we don't get the data from Amazon. Like, we know how many people have bought our book on a given day. We don't know how many people have viewed our page. You know, we don't know how many people have clicked on our sample and decided not to purchase. So we're working with very limited data. So we are shooting in the dark in a sense. So I recommend trying a bit of everything. Like, I think I've done a little bit of everything at this point. I've done competitions, giveaways, sales, price drops, guest posts, interviews, library thing giveaways, hung out in readers' forums, you know, and I've tried pretty much everything except for the machine gun blast on Twitter where you say, buy my book every 10 minutes.
Which doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. I actually had a guy do it on my behalf. I think he was trying to do me a favor. And I think for 24 hours, he tweeted, buy this book every 34 minutes. My sales didn't, it didn't affect my sales one little bit. So I think we've conclusive proof now that that definitely doesn't work. But yeah, try a little bit of everything. You know, some people won't be comfortable with blogging. Some people are not crazy about Twitter. Some people aren't crazy about Facebook. Some people don't like to give books away for free. They have a big thing about that. That's okay. You know, you don't have to do all of these things. Not one of these things will guarantee you success. You just got to try a little bit of everything and see what works for you. See what works for your readers, you know, because different things work in different genres. Pricing is very different in different genres. Some readers gobble up free books in certain genres and others don't care about them, like possibly literary fiction. They don't really care so much about free books. So like try a little bit of everything and see what works for you. But one thing I would say is very important is set up Google alerts on your name, on the name of your book and the name of your blog. And that way you'll get an email, usually within a few hours, of someone mentioning you or your books. And that way you can kind of track if someone did a review on a blog and you can see there was a sales spike that day, you know. And then you can kind of see what's effective and what's not. But if I was to choose one thing out of everything that I've done, I would say free. Using free cleverly is very, very powerful. I actually have two short stories that went free on Amazon today. I never had anything free on Amazon before. And the numbers are just insane. I think it was just before we started speaking, I think it was like 700 downloads in an hour, which is, which is crazy. But I've done free in other ways, you know, like Let's Get Digital. I made the PDF free and let anyone download it. I put a Creative Commons license on it, meaning anyone could put it up on their own site for download or email it to anyone else or copy it as long as they didn't charge for it. And what I found was a huge percentage of those readers that got it for free ended up buying the book, either as a thank you or because they just wanted to own it, because people like owning things, or they bought another one of my books, you know, as a way of saying thank you, or they donated. You know, I made a few hundred dollars out of donations from people that read it for free. But more importantly, it gets the ideas out there, it gets your name out there, it gets you all kinds of exposure. So the next time someone runs across your name on Amazon, they're more primed to click on that link and check you out.
Absolutely. So a couple more questions. Firstly, what do you see happening in 2012? What is ahead, given that we've had so much change in 2011?
Ooh, well, let me see. The last time I made a prediction was I said that some big household star was going to go self-publishing before Christmas. And then I think a week later, J.K. Rowling announced he was self-publishing. So I'm very careful in case I upset the apple cart by making Stephen King self-publish or something like that. Competition out there. But I don't know, like I think self-publishers are kind of like the canaries in the in the coal mine for the larger publishers. They're watching what we're doing very closely, even if they might not admit it. And the kind of things they're getting to grips with now, like pricing the lead book in a series very cheaply or even using 99 cent. I see some books from large publishers being priced very cheaply. Yeah. That's all stuff we were doing, you know, about a year ago. And I think self-publishers got to grips with pricing as a tool and kind of took the emotion out of it and made a distinction between value and price and all that. I think we were there about a year ago. And now we're experimenting things with like KDP Select and using free quite judiciously. And in 6 months, they'll probably be doing that. But I think because there's thousands of us out there all trying different things and all sharing information with each other, I think we're always going to be able to innovate quicker. Now, they might be able to implement things on a scale that we can't, but we'll always be able to innovate quicker. So I think we'll always be one step ahead in one sense. So, yeah, there's going to be all sorts of stuff that's impossible to predict. But I think subscription models are going to be big in 2012. I think we might see some of them where it's free to read books with ads in them. I think that's probably going to come along this year. I think the price of e-readers is going to drop to effectively zero, where you can sign up for something and get a free e-reader. Or you have an ad-supported e-reader. I think standard e-readers might even go as low as $50 by Christmas. Tablets are going to drop in price. Everything is just going to get cheaper. As for books, some people think that with this pressure on free, that the average price is going to drop. But I saw a very interesting study the other day that the average price of self-published work has actually gone up this year.
Yeah.
And that's what I've noticed from talking to my couple of my friends and peers, but I'm always careful not to extrapolate out from, you know, a very limited group.
Mm.
But it seems to be that a lot more people are moving away from the 99 cent price point now and trying $2.99 or $3.99 or $4.99.
Mm.
So I think you're going to see a lot of dynamic pricing from people, like things like price pulsing and limited sale drops. And I think readers will eventually get trained to think that a book doesn't have a fixed price, much the way that an airline ticket does.
Mm.
And that when they see what they think is a bargain, they're going to grab it straight away as opposed to putting it on a maybe list. Mm. So there's going to be all sorts of interesting dynamics there. I think it was Scott Nicholson that said that self-publishing has become like day trading now. You know, we're calculating when to come off a free run on Amazon and where that will pole vault you in the charts and what price to have it at. And it was a very astute comment. I think it's going to become more like that. I think there's going to be more skills we'll have to learn and more information to assimilate, and it's going to get more complicated.
Mm, but very exciting time, don't you think?
Yes, very exciting. And, you know, what's great is that every time I look at the top 100, I see new names, new self-publishers, people I haven't heard of. And that's great. Like, because in July, when I released Let's Get Digital, and I think I only wrote it over like 3 weeks or something, but I looked around for everyone who was selling in good amounts and approached a variety of people to see if they contribute. So I was pretty familiar with the names in July who were selling well or had sold well all year. And then, like, even a month or two later, like, since Amazon broke out that top 100 indie list, I was looking through it, and I only knew maybe 10% of the names on it.
Mm.
And now when I look at it, like, it's maybe even less than that. And there's a huge amount of people out there who are selling huge amounts of books, and I think that's going to increase.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and the last question, and you said I could ask you this. So if you got offered a book deal for your novel, what are you going to say?
I've no interest, possibly with Amazon, but that wouldn't even be a definite. My default position is to reject any deal because I've only just started out. You know, I haven't sold a huge amount of books yet. I think I'm closing in on 2,000 now. And I'm very much at the start. I've no idea what level I could reach. Maybe I'll only ever sell another 10 books, you know, but maybe I'll sell a lot more. And if I sold a book now, I think I would undervalue it. And I'd like to see what I can achieve first. You know, that's maybe a little selfish or a little egotistical, but I'd like to see what I could do. I think that would be interesting. But I could see myself taking some kind of limited deal in the future. I'd certainly be interested in a print deal because pain in the ass. And I'd certainly be interested in a foreign deal, but a digital deal in the US or the UK?
No.
I think I can sell ebooks better than they can at the level that they would support me. You know, obviously, if I was getting the Amanda Hocking treatment, they could blow me out of the water, but they're not going to do that. You know, so if you're talking about the kind of average publishing deal, which I wasn't even able to get, but let's say I would have got it, I think I can sell more books than they could for me at that level.
Mm. No, fantastic. It's all about empowerment, I think, this whole indie movement at the moment. It's very empowering. That's how I feel anyway.
Yeah, and I've discovered I'm a control freak. I never knew that, but now I don't want anyone else deciding my covers and my blurbs and my price and everything else. Like before, I would have thought, hey, great, take care of all that for me. I'll just do the writing. But now I want to control all that stuff. I find it very hard to give it up.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Okay, so where can people find you and your books?
Everywhere, because I'm not in KDP Select, so you can get me on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Smashwords, and a few ebook stores you haven't even heard of yet. And I even have a couple of paperbacks coming out towards the end of the month. I'm actually releasing a paperback of Let's Get Digital and a paperback of my new one, Stormhurst Valparaiso, and they should be out in a couple of weeks.
And your website?
My website is, I'm going to have to spell this for people, because it's davidgochran.com, but that's DavidGaughran.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, David. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.